South Sudan political leaders yesterday spoke at different platforms. Earlier, we gave you snippets of President Salva Kiir's address at the United Nations General Assembly, and we also heard from the first vice president's speech at the International Day of Peace celebration at the Nyakrone Cultural Center here in Juba. Now, we want to get reactions on the leaders' remarks at these platforms and see where we are as South Sudan and what could be the way forward. Well, who else can be the best people to talk about this? Well, we're glad to have with us here in the studio Edmond Yakani, who is the Director of Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, and Andrea March Mabior, who is a political commentator, and they joins me right about now so we can have a conversation and looking at these speeches and looking at where we are as a country and moving forward. March, good morning, and it's always good to have you on the Miraya Breakfast Show.
Good morning, Sabedulia.
Edmond Yakani, it's been a while for you to join us here in the studio. Good morning, welcome, and it's good to have you on the Miraya Breakfast Show.
Good morning, Sabit William, and good morning to listeners of Miraya.
Let's start with you, Edmond. Let's start with the President's speech at the General Assembly. How significant was it, first of all, for the President to address the Assembly after such a long time from 2014 and almost a decade since he last actually addressed the Assembly? First of all, how significant was this?
First, I'd like to start by saying the speech of the president is what we call a speech of a decade absentia in the UN Security Council. That's one thing that I'd like to refer to. The speech have not responded to some of the key issues that we wish to be brought forward. We have this generic messaging that His Excellency President have communicated to the world, our commitment to global peace and stability, our commitment to sustainable development goal, and he refer example of the commitment to sustainable development goal, the policy of free primary and secondary education, which is very good. At least that's something that we appreciate. At least that concept is there, because if you want to achieve sustainable development goal, then education, and then the commitment to the national action plan, which is in line. And of course, this national action plan is referred to the roadmap for consolidating peace and stability in the country, which we wish you could have provided more details. And specifically, when talk about the national action plan for 2021-2024, which is the roadmap actually conclusion, the question that stand before the call pending task of the revitalized peace agreement, why are they not implemented? Why are they delayed? I wish that is what the Security Council want to hear. He could have provided the reasons why it delay and what he thinks should be the solutions. And you know, the only solution he threw out there is that he wished that the Security Council could have lifted the armed embargo, because the armed embargo have hindered the transition security arrangement, which of course that particular arms embargo requires political commitment and political will in delivering the revitalized peace agreement. It will be lifted automatically. You don't need to really talk much about it. So I think that is the other maybe key message I will say that I will harvest out of the president's speech, and this particularly is going to empower us. He acknowledged that if we want to engage in credible and peaceful and non-violent election, there's a need to involve everybody. And in the list of his stakeholders that he mentioned civil society, youth, women, traditional leaders, opposition. And this tells you that He concluded by saying this means an ownership by the people, and this have link with the civic space and political space. As His Excellency President addressed the Security Council, telling them that we need to see inclusive, transparent processes where all these players I've mentioned have to be engaged. The question is the state agencies availing the civics and political space? We have seen what happened with the SOA event, and we've seen what happened out in some states. So this also goes to the leadership in the country, not to contradict. So for me, the challenge is, with these few messages I've addressed after the president's speech, will the state agencies respect it? Yes. Will they not accept the president? Yeah. And remember, when His Excellency President is going to the UN Security Council, the people who are MPs in the parliament, the lawmakers, they know President is going to UN Security Council, he's going to face a lot of questions around the revitalized peace agreement. They passed electoral law with a new text that was not there in the original content of the law. This 5% allocated to the president to appoint people. And I think that have generated a pressure and have reduced the weight of the president.
We'll talk about those details later as we continue. Now, talking about the president's speech, you did mention there some of it, sounds very great, and some of our listeners made some reactions earlier about saying the president's speech sounds good, but some of the things are not really what we are seeing on the ground. He did mention especially of child marriages, free education, and he's saying this is not reflecting really on what is happening on the ground. It's more of a public relations speech to the people out there, and not really what's going on the ground. Is that, do you
I buy the same sentiment, and the problem is not His Excellency President. Of course he might have the problem in not following up with his subordinates. It's the subordinate of the president that always they undermine the decision of the president, and that's why when President got there, he gave a PR speech, but you come to realize his subordinate who are supposed to translate, because President lay policies, mm-hmm. but his subordinates, like the minister, are supposed to translate into action. Normally, directives of the president in this country is not respected. I'll give you a few, just two examples. Remember, when the president directed the state governors, county commissioners, chief administrators to open political space, what happened? Nothing is opening. Still, some people can take responsibility and shrink the space besides president directing. Secondly, the unification of the forces. How many times have they promised us that we're going to unify the forces? How many times mm-hmm. have the security advisor of the president come out to the public say, after one week, how many weeks? These 1 week have gone to almost one full year.
Mm. So, Edmund, if you're head of a family and you said something to be done in your family, and the children and madam and everybody who you asked to be the head of the family is not implementing it, do you sit there and blame them?
No, you hold them accountable.
Yeah.
You hold them accountable. And this is part of the blame that goes back to His Excellency President, is that he does not hold his ministers accountable. Some of his ministers, some of his subordinates in the security institutions are really undermining his directives.
Right.
He said this and contradict. Like, right. For example, when he made that slogan, under his leadership, no return to war. But what has happened in the parliament always, it's indicator that some MPs are fan of violence. They want to return the country to war by making contradictory statement to consensus position of a house like parliament.
All right, we'll get back to you, Edmund. With us as well is political commentator and a senior journalist who was practicing journalism. And with us, Andrea March. Andrea, the president spoke about fast tracking the implementation of the remaining issues in the peace agreement. What issues do you think need to be fast tracked, and do you see within this time that we are left with, you know, fast tracking this whole implementation process of the remaining issues can be achieved?
Thank you once again for welcoming me to Maraya. I think the situation in South Sudan have become very complicated. What we need now actually is not even fast-tracking the agreement, but what we need is political will. Mm-hmm. If you could not implement agreement from 2018 to now, and you are left with 15 months for elections, mm-hmm. then I don't see, if there is no political will, you will not do anything. The problem that we are facing now, Sabit William, mm-hmm. it seems like we are repeating the scenario of 2013, unfortunately. If you look at war in 2013, there was a very tense environment, mm-hmm. very tense atmosphere before the war in 2013. I'm seeing our political actors, they lost trust. Mm-hmm. They did not use the period of the agreement to build trust. It seems like they are still looking at themselves as enemies, mm-hmm. rather than peace partners who are supposed to unite people of South Sudan. And if you are quarreling every now and then in the parliament and where, and you don't agree, you don't look at yourself as peace partners, you still look at yourself as people who are fighting in the bush, mm-hmm. then how are you going to unite people of South Sudan?
Yes, you two both mentioned about parliament, and it seems like there is a lot of the members of parliament who are, of course, representing everybody in the country. It seems like they are more of their party. Yes, we'll talk about the rest, but talking about the parliament particularly, is more like they are representing and they're there for their party interests and not the implementation of the peace process.
Exactly, because what I'm seeing now, mm-hmm. Parties to the agreement, it looks like they were forced to sign this agreement. It looks like they were forced to sign this agreement. That is why they have become selective mm-hmm. in implementation of the agreement. They choose some articles that favor them. If you see this article is not good with you, you will leave it out, mm-hmm. and you want to jump to elections. There is no shortcut for elections. There are international standards for any free and fair elections. You must start from A, B, C, D. You talk about security arrangement. This is the backbone of the of peace agreement in South Sudan. There is no way you can jump security arrangement and then you want to run for election. So there is loss of trust between political mm-hmm. actors yes. here in South Sudan. Number two, you need to make decisions on a consensus basis. Unilateral decisions are not good in such a situation. Mm. And this is why exactly war broke out in 2013. So we did not learn. The war in 2013, we did not learn the lessons. We are repeating the same mistakes every now and then. I think some of us become not responsible.
Mm. And why are you saying that we have not learned anything? What are we repeating, particularly just those same things that you think we are repeating as a country?
One, what was just happening in the parliament? IO are claiming that Dr. Riek Machar is restricted, is not moving. Mm-hmm. If he's not restricted, how is he going to campaign?
If he's restricted, how
is he going to campaign? And if he cannot have a power to move, to campaign, then that election will not be free and fair. Not only Dr. Riek, anybody, even SPLM or SAWA or anybody in South Sudan, if you want a free, credible elections, that will reflect the will of people of South Sudan, then you must create political environment, political space for people to exercise their right.
All right. Edmund, do you share the same thoughts with what Andre said when it comes to the issue of disagreement, and we have learned nothing because now there is restriction of the leaders of oppositions and also parliament. We've heard where parliamentarians have walked out boycotting sessions. Do you see us going towards the same direction of 2013?
I've mentioned immediately after the incident happened in parliament that actually some of the MPs are returning the country to war, which is contradictory to the speech of the president. What are the indicators that you're asking, like about my colleague, to give a specific one? Always you see a rise in antagonistic language. And if you see now the language between specifically SPLM-IO and SPLM is too antagonistic. It's growing every day.
Yeah, divisive language.
And divisive language. And if you see what the first deputy speaker say, we have been all this time keeping quiet. Now we want to tell you. If you remember that video, which is trending.
Yes.
That's what the first speaker was saying. All this, it means they've been tolerating a lot. Now they said, we need to disclose it. And that's how 2013 started. That's indicator number one. Indicator number two, we have MPs who are revolutionaries, who like revolution. We still have revolutionary MPs in the parliament. We don't have.
What do you mean by that?
People who like to create a revolution by all possible means. Mm-hmm. People should rebel. The revolutionary MPs are still in the parliament. And some of these MPs who are revolutionaries, honestly, his excellency president needs to handle them properly because they want to create things that diffuse and reduce trust and confidence and increase deficit in trust and confidence. And they feel like they can bully. You know, you cannot bully people in this country, by the way. You can bully today. That's why I would say, where is Basir? Where is Gaddafi? Where is Libya? Look what has happened in West Africa. You alone, two or three of you or ten of you, you can kill hundreds, but you will not remain in power. You will go. So some of the MPs are still have behaviors of revolution in the parliament. That I say that. The other thing that I feel is that some individuals who believes that actually entertaining culture of confrontation is the best way to win political dominance in either retaining power or in winning power. That is the third indicator. And this is now going on, you can see. But among the people, even go to the states, it's the same thing happened in the states. Some governors so aggressive towards other political parties. Now, there's territorial control. I will tell you, there were some SPLM who will never put their footsteps into IO control areas. You see what happened in Fangak. So is that culture of election? Are going to go for election? So for what level? We need to make sure people are open and people are honest.
All right.
And by honesty, you need to compromise. Unfortunately, we have MPs who are not compromising. And you can hear the language. They speak so aggressive as if they own us and the nation. They don't forget that the power we have. If we start moving it, when we reach the level saying enough is enough, nobody can control that. You can kill me today, but you may not kill the press of the people on what they want to be the right thing.
Awesome. Great. Now, you both have mentioned what is going on, the situation on the ground. Let's look at the solutions. Of course, we've said quite a number of things that you've said, and looking at it, there's restriction of movement for other opposition parties. There are members of parliament who are speaking like, you know, they own the country, according to your words. What do we do from here to set the environment for elections, since there are a lot of insistence that the elections will take place next year? What needs to be put in place, Mr. Andrea?
Okay, first of all, I think His Excellency President Kiir has spoken several times that he does not want this country to go back to war in several occasions. And I believe majority of people of South Sudan don't want that. Mm-hmm. The only way is to see what can we do in these 15 months that are left for elections. One, you need to deploy the unified force in different hot spots in South Sudan. so that people can move freely. You go from Okobo to Pachala, you go from Raja to Demzuber, from Demzuber you go to Yambio, to Anzara, to Kajukaji, you move freely. This is the environment for elections. Mm. If that thing is not there, then there will be no election. Secondly, we must own the agreement as people of South Sudan. I think some people are thinking that America will come to rescue us, or Kawajad will come from Europe to rescue us. Even Kawajad are busy with their own war.
They have their own problems. Every country has
their
own problems.
If you go to Ukraine now, the war between Russia and Ukraine is actually war between Russia and NATO. The tension between U.S. And China, economic tension, there. You come here to our neighbors. You learn from Central Africa, the M23 in eastern Congo, and war here in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. And Sudan, the guarantor of the peace, has bigger problem.
The guarantors, yes.
The central actor. Mm-hmm.
Yes, have biggest problem than what we do. So, what I want to say is this. Election is a path to democracy. Election can transform South Sudan to be a democratic society. But we should not rush to election. Why? Because election could come with violence. There are challenges of elections. Mm-hmm. There are disputes in the election. You must put down mechanism to address any dispute. So election can turn violence. This is what people are forgetting.
Yeah.
Elections can turn violence, like what happened in Ethiopia, like what happened in Kenya, until now is being felt. Mm-hmm. Election can turn violence.
All right.
So let me finish this.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Rushing to election in a divided society where Dinka and Nuer and Suluk don't see eye to eye in Malakal. Mm-hmm. It is not a good idea. You must start from now. We still have time. We still have enough time to reconcile our people, deploy the necessary forces to ensure our security, collect guns from the hands of the communities, because this fighting between ethnic groups in South Sudan is a threat to election itself.
All right.
If people are still fighting, then there will be no elections.
Now, we have seen a lot of insistence on the election in 2024, which is, of course, next year. We have around 15 months, if I'm correct there, 15 months. Edmond, you just heard from Madge, election can get violent if not conducted in a free and fair manner. There are those who said election cannot go ahead because the time frame and all that to be put in place for a free and fair elections is just next to impossible. There are those who said, you know what, people of South Sudan are tired. They really, really want to be holding their leaders accountable. They want to choose their own representative. Just recently, President Salva Kiir said he is tired of five vice presidents. Election must take place. Where do that leave us? And just in very clear and simple terms, what's the right way? Election can still take place in 2024 and go on the right way that South Sudanese citizens can be convinced that it's fair, free, and balanced election. What can happen in this scenario? Because people are confused. It's either it happens in the very wrong way, and in worst scenarios, people go back to conflict, or it does not happen, and then what now?
First, Sebit, me personally, I'm for elections to take place in December for one reason. Mm-hmm. I don't want consuming government to exist more. This government is a consuming government. This government is really very consuming. Look at the size of the parliament and the executive, the V8. Consuming government need to be reduced to a government that deliver. That's always how I describe this current government. They're too consuming. Mm-hmm. And by the way, because of too much consuming, they're so comfortable. But the way they're fighting, they don't want election. They fight in different way. Some of them are fighting, we don't want election because preconditions are not done. Some will say we need elections, but they don't reconstitute the required institutions for the elections. So actually, they themselves, they are fan of that call, that let us delay elections. But how they make that call? They make the call a different way. Mm-hmm. One sounds attractive. Let's go for elections, but technically, let's delay the reconstitution of political parties council, election commission. Let's delay the process. It's the same language by saying we are not going for election because preconditions are not being fulfilled. It's the same language. Mm-hmm. So they're comfortable right now. If you tell this guy, go to the parliament and go to the executive council ministers, ask them, can we delay election? Yes will sound more than no. Mm-hmm. This will happen. So elections have to happen. What need to be right or wrong in terms of the elections? It is a political leadership of the day. The current political leadership can make election to be transparent, credible, and peaceful and non-violent. The current leadership of the day can make election to be violent. So anything is political leadership.
All, we all know the current political leadership of the day. So do you see it happening that it can go transparent and how elections...
For me, if we don't create citizens' pressure on them to hold elections, they are fan of this. They will delay the elections extent, or they will delay the elections by creating violence. And that's why we're saying right now that we're heading towards violence, because violence has been used as a strategy to extend transitional periods in the country. So there's two ways. So we don't want them to delay election, neither they using violence to extend transitional period, because that's what they're going to do. So elections have to take place. What is required right now, Sebit? Practical. If His Excellency arrive from US, we have 15 months. The 15 months can be divided into three phases. Phase one, which is starting from today, His Excellency President need to reconstitute immediately the required institutions.
Right. Edmond Alia, you were talking and giving a point particularly on the issue of elections and whether it should take place or should not take place and what are the circumstances. And you put your point very, very across that elections should take place, but parties are making excuses whether it should or should not. And this is the same. Just before we get a reaction from March, on brief, what is your summary on whether or not elections should take place?
First, all what is called as implementation of preconditions for the conduct of the elections does not require one SSP. It just requires a political decision that is gained through political consensus. To reconstitute the National Election Commission, you don't need money. To reconstitute political parties council, you don't need money. To redeploy the first graduated unified forces with the stakes, you don't need money.
Yes, okay. And that will bring us to the point earlier, next point, which is the call for the embargo, which is, you know, for the, so it can, because but President Kiir also talk about that. But before we go there, let's get a very quick reaction from March. March, Edmond spoke passionately about the elections. What is your thought on that?
First of all, Sabit William, people of South Sudan are in dilemma. The scenario which we are seeing now, we have three scenarios next year. Mm-hmm. Three.
Tell us, what are those scenarios?
There are no even fourth. Mm-hmm. One, either you implement the agreement in letter and spirit and you conduct a free, fair election that will reflect the will of people of South Sudan, which this is what we want, and this is what people of South Sudan want, and this is what the international community want. This is one. And until now, there are no signs that we will conduct a free and fair elections. Mm-hmm. The other scenario is for the parties to go to the agreement, continue with their confusion, and lead us back to war. Mm-hmm. Number four is to conduct an elections in absence of security, mm-hmm. in absence of political space, And just come up with a new government that will not reflect the will of people, and election that will not meet the international standard, and that election may not be recognized by the region and the world. These are the three. Mm-hmm. So people of South Sudan are in dilemma. For me, elections is a path to democracy, but it should not be a matter of life and death. Mm-hmm. It should not be a matter of life and death.
Great. All right, just very quickly, because we have limited time, let's go on what also the president talked about yesterday, is the appeal for the uplifting of arms embargo. First, Edmond, what is your thought on this? Is this something that you see that the world will be sympathetic on South Sudan and actually give an ear?
You know, the lifting of arms embargo does not need muscles. It needs a political commitment to deliver the agreement. Actually, even the international community will get ashamed what they use as a conditions for imposing arms embargo if we can implement them without even asking them. For instance, when we're bringing these soldiers, and this is one thing I observed in the graduation because I delivered a speech there. Even the soldiers that belong to the government, they are on sticks. Mm-hmm. Where are their guns? Are we graduating really a new soldiers, or are we graduating new recruits? Because the agreement is calling for those soldiers who are actively shooting guns during the war to be unified. Mm-hmm. Where are those guns that they're using, if there's a trust and confidence? And that's what I'm saying. Some few elites in this country have kept the country hostage to their political grievances, which individuals. So we don't need to shout too much around that. What we need to do is, let's implement agreement. Listen, how many guns have been collected from the DR? If you see all the media articles, just go and do a literature review. How many guns have we collected from the communities? And those guns were not being declared destroyed. Mm-hmm. Where are they? Can we not use them? Can we recycle them? So for me, that's one thing that I'd like to bring, that we should not use the arms embargo as a muscle of battle with the international community, where we are demonstrating deficit in trust and confidence. We should not balance our deficit in trust and confidence by pushing that angle.
All right.
I know that. So now let me tell you some few actions that need to be undertaken right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have 15 months. 15 months, you can divide them into three phases. Each phase, 3 months, 5 months. Still, we have time for the conduct of election. If President arrived from New York today, the first thing to the president should commission is commission a complete national consensus for fast-tracking the implementation of the pending task. What does that mean? It means bring the parties and bring the stakeholders. Let us sit in one room. Let us see the 15 months. Let us see. These 15 months, we can. Everything is around the release of the money.
They already have a roadmap.
Let me tell you, this roadmap is still carry the element of deficit in trust and confidence. Because remember on the roadmap that day, I told them, if you fail to implement the agreement in 3 years' time, what miracle are you going to do in 24 months? That's my question.
Yes,
simply why? The deficit in trust and confidence among the principal have kept this country hostage. Let us be true.
I'm afraid that's the time we have. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming to Mira Studios. But as usual, we give you less than 1 minute to make your concluding remarks. And we start with you, Andrea March.
I would want to say that the parties with agreement should not look at themselves as enemies, but they should lead by example, view themselves as partners in peace building in South Sudan. That way they can encourage people of South Sudan to work together in peace and harmony and rebuild the social fabric. That is very important, and that we should make decisions on consensus. Unilateral decisions may not be helpful to South Sudan, and we should work together as people of South Sudan, as political actors, create a conducive atmosphere so that we can conduct a free and fair elections in 2024.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Andrea. Edmond, what will be your final remarks in less than a minute, please?
Number one, if presidents come back from New York, we need a meeting of the presidency on fast-tracking the pending task of the River Taurus Agreement. Number two, I'm calling upon our religious leaders to quickly take responsibility of engaging our political parties to reduce the deficit in trust and confidence, and specifically following the enactment of the electoral law. We are a bit worried if religious leaders cannot intervene into that particular differences. Finally, citizen, let us not get back. Let's not give the politician an opportunity to extend the extended period. We must create a home-based pressure for holding our politicians accountable so that we rebuild the social fabric that was broken among ourselves, and we opt to live in peace and stability without any violence.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Edmond Yakani. Thank you, Andrea Machimabior. With two of you, I think we can speak the whole day and analyze situations on the ground. It's always nice to have you on the Mirror Breakfast. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
You too.